Welcome, Black Hollywood Live fans. On today's Fit Club, we talk McDonald's new McVegan, healthcare denials for the obese, and 2018 fitness trends with vegan actor Marley Ficalora. Stay tuned for more.
You're tuned into Black Hollywood Live, Fit Club.
Here we go. Welcome, Fit Clubbers. How are you guys doing? Happy World Vegan Day. We got an exciting one, a great panel. My name is Shaka Smith. As always, you guys can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong. Mr. Corey Taylor, where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at I am Corey Taylor and Twitter, FAA Lifestyle.
Funny Sarai on Instagram and Twitter, and on Facebook it's just Sayrie. Just don't like the page.
And we are joined by guest Marley Ficalora. Where can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me on Instagram at Marley Ficalora, or you can find me on Facebook where I post videos every Monday and Thursday. It's facebook.com/MarleyFicalora.
Nice. This is exciting. We got a full panel of vegans with the exception of this one.
Ooh,
here.
She's getting there.
Vegan shaming?
She's getting there, though. That's a good sign.
I'm a pescatarian. I'm on the right track.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Deliverance. Okay. You're on the right path. Yeah. You know, it's my goal to convert every guest and every host in here. So
my good friend is vegan.
Okay.
My very good friend is vegan.
So you're kind of like vegan by default.
By default, yeah.
And look at all the information you can get from the three of us, right?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Right.
Vegan by proxy.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. We had some really cool stories, so we'll kind of delve right into these hot topics and go for it. I thought this was interesting. In the UK, Hertfordshire, England, they're talking about denying people. You're already shaking
your
head.
I'm already against it.
Denying people health care due to obesity and smoking. So what it basically is routine medical health care, not essential. You know, obviously if it's life threatening, they'll take care of you. But if you're, I guess if you have the flu, but you have a BMI over 40 and you haven't lost, 15% in the last 18 months of that BMI, then you're not going to get your coverage taken care of. And if you're a smoker and you haven't stopped smoking for eight weeks, and they can test it. I didn't know they could test.
It says it's a smoke test.
Yeah, smoke test to tell if you've smoked in the last 8 weeks. So, or if you have a BMI over 30 and you can, you have 8 or 9 months to reduce it by 30%. It's obviously in England, but is this a good policy for the United States?
So I think this is really interesting. I don't think people should be denied surgery. I think when it comes to health and healthcare, everyone should have access to it. But it is interesting that they are starting to take measures to try to decrease obesity, because I think we've kind of let it run wild, and that's why in England as well as in the United States, obesity rates are skyrocketing. It's an exponential growth, and if we continue at this rate, we're going to continue to have problems with people's health. And you could look at Japan, for example. They have around 3% obesity, and they do have restrictions in place. They don't go as far as not allowing people to get surgery, but they do have, tax incentives and other things that incentivize people to be healthy, and I think that's important.
Yeah, and we're not talking surgery like you're about to die. Like we're talking about non-essential. We're talking only routine stuff.
I feel like obesity flows with a lifestyle. You know, I feel like you should maybe tax that for the next generation. To start someone who's already obese, they already self-medicate through food or whatever the case may be, or why they're fat. Someone left them. I don't know what the case is. to all of a sudden say, hey, you fat something. You can't get surgery. Then
we're not calling your names.
Well, okay, yeah. No. I was like, because I felt the blame for being vegan, not being vegan. No. But just all of a sudden, just start and implement a rule like that immediately. I think it's a little harsh.
I'm gonna tell you what I think. I'm a bit, I'm a little more old fashioned, but I will say this. I believe preventative medicine is the leading medicine.
You're right.
And I believe people have to be afraid to do something.
Yeah.
So in my mind, this is just like a shock type of thing. Like, oh my gosh, that means if I don't get my act together, if something happens, I won't get the help I'm needed. I feel like it's just. I feel like that's just where we are, where we have to do something, say something that radical just to make you mindful of the life you're living. Because really and truthfully, everything's worse and extremified when you have bad health. Yeah. I mean, a cut on your finger is a big deal. If you can't, bend down to tie your own shoes or go up, stairs, it matters. So,
and it's backed up a little bit by the economic argument. So smokers and the obese do take longer to heal, which equals longer hospital stays, which equals more money to cover.
More tax breaks.
Right. And again, it's non-essential. So I almost want to strike a balance here where it's like, because remember, if it's covered, so you can still pay for whatever you need. It'll just be out of pocket, So I don't know if it's all the worst thing in the world, and they will review it if it's an individual particular case. Like maybe my BMI is actually probably over 30, and then they might go, okay, well, you're not who we're talking about.
Tweak it a little bit.
Yeah, or you have this issue and that issue. So you, we can do it on a case-by-case basis to some degree, but that's sort of the blanket rule. You guys still aren't for it?
I think it's more, it should be more gradual. That's all. I think it's a good idea, but I think it should be more gradual. I don't know. Maybe it's I'm a woman.
But
and
what? Why?
No. Gradual in terms of, let's say we're going to do this in a year. So everything's covered. Yeah, so it won't start till next year, January.
For the person who's sick now.
I'm looking at the health of the people.
Yeah.
And we've been spewing out facts to the world about how your lifestyle, can lead you to an early grave and things you should be mindful of. You had your whole life to get it right. No.
But you were there for a little bit. You did Fit to Fat. Now, what if you're doing that show and you got the flu and you can't pay?
I'm going to be like, and this kid is why you need to live a healthy life.
And I think it's interesting that they're going about it this way. This is not necessarily how I would approach this problem.
How would you do it?
So I did a video on this as well, and I think that it's kind of a top-down problem. When you think about it, corporations are incentivized to get people to continue to eat their products even if they're not healthy. Right. So that's why you have all these additives, preservatives, so it lasts longer. And it's causing people to be obese when it's just the accessibility to healthy food is low. True. So if you put these people at a disadvantage in terms, and everyone says, well, and I got a lot of comments on my video as well with people saying, well, you still get to choose what you put in your mouth, but if there's nothing like a food desert or a place where there's nothing available that is healthy, we live in Los Angeles, we all have good eating habits for the most part.
Did you look at me?
We all have cheat meals or make mistakes. But at the end of the day, what I think England should be doing, London and as well as the United States, is we should be thinking about how do we make our food healthier rather than how do we take away from those that are already. And don't get me wrong, I think we have to make drastic measures and we have to make change because the way we're going about it now is just not working.
Yeah. And you think the government...
Go ahead. Well, I was just saying, it's a capitalistic system. So if you do change it where the people who are obese now start to lose the weight because of the medical issue, they're going to stop buying, whoever manufactures the Twinkies, and all of a sudden they're going to start manufacturing things that they know healthy people would want because they still want to get that profit margin, right?
Yeah.
I mean, are you guys for necessarily more government control? You know what I mean? Like, that's an answer too. You know, what is the line? For example, if government is, what is your favorite thing? Soy as vegans? What are your guys?
That's next.
What do you guys love? What if all of a sudden there's no more soy?
I like fresh fruit and vegetables.
Yeah. Exactly.
So no soy for you guys?
Well, no. I'm not saying soy, but... If the government's paying for it, the government, because remember, the government's saying we're providing this health care. They should be able to make reasonable guidelines. Now, we're going to disagree about what's reasonable, but I don't have a problem with the government saying, here are these guidelines for whatever it is, and this is how you get covered.
I think they should take away the problem. I think they should just remove tobacco, remove cigarettes. Now, that seems more extreme.
Well, people can't
remove that from their life, though.
But at the same time, they're still using it and they can't get health care or they can't get serviced.
But that's more government intrusion to me.
You think so?
Yeah, because tobacco, that's
a
private...
you can't buy it if it's not there.
But that's a private industry. So now the government's got to go to someone... And remember, that private industry affects families and people that are working, the secretary, So if you remove tobacco, all of a sudden, you're collapsing part of the economy. Whereas when you remove an incentive, slowly people will start to take away the incentive for tobacco to make tobacco products, right?
Yeah. Or maybe the guidelines should be stronger. You know, if there's a certain chemical in there that's deterring your body, then maybe the FDA should shut that down.
Then, yeah.
Right?
Well, and I think that's
maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I also, put less poison in the cigarettes.
Yeah. I also think it's interesting when you think about, so the government regulation, right? So, or the government being involved in our lives and impacting what we eat or what we smoke or what we don't smoke. But you think
don't
about
tell
it.
Me, so.
but when you think about it, there is ways that the government does provide food for people, and that is through schools, right? So all the public schools, from kids all the way from kindergarten all the way through high school are in public schools for the majority of people, and they're getting, if they're in lower income households or in a minority, they're probably going to be getting free meals at schools. And the government, I think, is failing people because they're offering unhealthy food to kids, and that's a habit. It's habitual. You think back, I loved that food when I was younger. Do you know what I mean? If that food was a fried chicken sandwich and French fries, and French fries counting as a vegetable and then milk, now you're causing massive problems. So I think, like I said again, if the government does want to get involved, it needs to get involved in the right way rather than
the best way to do it.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's where obesity stems from, really. It's those early days.
Yeah, and I was born a vegetarian and I never ate meat, and I think, and I never would, and I think that if more people were born that way, you would see less people eating meat. It's just because it's habitual.
I heard that I thought it was a myth. So you've never ever had meat?
I've never ever had meat.
A friend, you were eight. Someone said, "Have a bite." You were like
the last of the pure.
Never.
Get his blood.
I got offered thousands and thousands of dollars. Everyone used to say, "I'll pay you $1,000 right now to take a bite of this."
10,000.
Yeah, and I won't do it. And I think that part of it was just that's a cool streak to never have eaten it, but that's not the reason why I did. I think there was no need to do it. It doesn't make you healthier. And then there's the ethical side of it, which is obviously the number one reason for being vegan for me is I just don't want to eat animals. I don't think it's fair to take their lives. And so there was no need for it, and it was going to hurt someone else. And if I don't have to hurt something or hurt someone to be healthy and happy, then there's no need to do it.
No chicken broth, no anything?
No chicken. I asked every single restaurant anytime I ate, is there lard in this? Is there chicken broth in this? I read labels since the day I was born.
Jeez. And you were that guy before it was even popular. Yeah, right.
And it's habitual. And it's a habit. If you're in the habit of doing that, it's just like it's another day.
You know what I mean? Did you get that from your parents? I'm sure.
My parents raised me that way. Which is another thing. You know, I didn't choose. Which is interesting, when people choose to go vegetarian, they choose to go vegan. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, I said this all throughout my life, I almost give them more credit than me because I had that choice bestowed on me because my parents made that choice.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, someone else who makes that conscious decision with a family full of people who eat meat or friends that eat meat, and they decide to make that change and that lifestyle change, which I think is amazing. I hope everyone out there, especially on World Vegan Day, goes vegan.
Do they ever give you that moment of saying, well, okay, here's how we raise you, but you can do what you want?
Yeah, of course. I think that was one of the reasons why I said, I don't know, I feel like we're a little off topic with the thing.
But
they gave me the choice, and I think that was probably the reason why I stayed my whole life. It's because they said, hey, look, we're not going to tell you. We're going to tell you why it's not the right thing to do, but we're not going to tell you that you can't do it.
What age did they give you that?
They told me from the beginning that I could that I could eat meat if I wanted to, because they knew that I was going to be. And I didn't start public school. I was homeschooled until fifth grade when I started playing, because I was playing basketball and baseball and football all my life in competitive. But when I went to middle school, they said that I had to go to school physically to play on the sports teams, and all my friends were on the teams, and I was like, I want to join the team, so I joined school. Cut line in the public school the first day I went to detention. So.
Oh, no.
Welcome.
That was a bad that little bad kid who eats those veggies.
Well, that's interesting, because I think a lot of people do, because even for me, I'm like, how am I going to raise my kid? Because, I mean, I want my kid to be vegan, but I also want my kid to feel like...
I'm showing them all the documentaries.
Watch
Foodie.
Chicken get decapitated.
Think about that, and I think the school just went vegetarian in New York City, the first all-vegetarian school, and I think that's a public school, which is amazing, and I think, you know, if England wants to combat this problem that they're having with, you know, all of this problems with obesity, it's the same with the United States. I think making schools vegan or making schools vegetarian, and then let the kids make the choice outside of that if they want to eat meat. I think a lot less kids would choose that. I think a lot less kids would be obese, and then they wouldn't have to say you can't have surgery if you're...
Most kids don't want to hurt animals. Like, Disney does a good job at... you know, promoting, you know, anti-poacher, and animals have voices and lives. Mm-hmm. We really get down to it.
And we're so good at thinking of it very separately. Food and then animals. Like, growing up, you're not thinking that chicken nugget is a chicken.
That's
a chicken nugget.
That's just what you call it.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. It's just delicious with barbecue sauce.
Exactly.
Yeah. I guarantee you, if you put a pig in a cage... I mean, not a cage, but in a playpen with children. The children aren't going to start eating the pig. They're going to sleep with it. You know, they're going to have fun.
They're going to love the pig.
Yeah, exactly. They're not going
to
want to eat it.
Man, well, that brings us to another hot topic. So it's always a hot topic. So the FDA is actually going the opposite way. Right now, there's an authorized health claim that soy reduces your heart disease risk. That's allowed on packages. It's fine. Now the FDA is relooking at this, and they're thinking they might pull back that, revoke that authorized health claim. And so there's two different things. Authorized health claim is what you can put on a package. It's like one of 12 claims. You can just throw that on there. It reduces risk of heart disease versus a qualified claim where you have to put that, but then you have to put like a disclaimer. You know, this is not supported by this much study, but, you know, this is kind of where it's trending, whatever. So they might reduce this to a qualified claim. Soy is always a huge thing. What did you think of this possible revocation?
Yeah, I saw this as well, and this is another one going back to government and their, you know, getting involved with our lives and the choices that we make and the food that we eat.
Uh-huh.
I think I don't always agree with the FDA, honestly. I don't think that they always make the right choices for us, and I think that there's corporations and other people influencing the decisions that they make, influencing the research that they do. But I personally think that I've eaten soy my whole life, as you said before.
Yeah, what
do you
fine,
vegans
right?
eat? Just soy.
Yeah.
I'm fine, but still, it's an individual basis. You know, I don't want to say that just because I'm fine that everyone should eat tons of soy, but. I think there are a lot of benefits if you look at countries that are soy heavy.
The Japanese, Chinese,
you know, Asian countries primarily. They do very well. They live very long.
Low rates of obesity.
Yeah, low rates of obesity. So I think going after soy isn't necessarily the best move. I think there's definitely dairy influence in that. I think, you know, when they're lobbying government entities like the FDA and spending millions and millions, if not billions of dollars trying to get them to pass legislation or make, you know, recommendations that are in favor of them, then you're going to see things that are taking away from their profits go away. And one of those things is soy. And that's why you saw the soy sales soar, because let's be honest, the majority of people are lactose intolerant and allergic to milk.
Yes.
Yeah. We're not supposed to be eating milk.
Yeah,
genetically, we're not supposed to be eating milk. And so they saw the alternative rise like crazy, which was soy milk. Which would say, hey, this tastes good. I'm not allergic to it. I'm not, you know, getting acne. I'm not getting, you know, hives, or I'm not, you know, all the different things that come with eating milk when you're lactose intolerant. And they saw their profits go down, and then they went and did whatever they possibly could. They put out all these myths and claims to say that, like, well, soy gives you, like, for example, males have enlarged breasts.
Yeah.
And that's crazy. Yeah. That is absolutely crazy. Yeah. Looking at my...
See, you got a C-cup or something.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, work hard on the pecs. But the claims are so insane and
unsupported
and aggressive.
Unsupported. Yeah.
So you think it was a fear thing? Like they was just trying to scare people away from soy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think
for profits.
That, yeah. They used a tactic that is very common in politics, is try to put fear, instill fear about the other person. But in this case, they instilled they made people afraid of soy. They thought that there was all of these things as far as even male breast enlargement that would make people shy away from soy, and then where are they gonna go? They go back to milk.
Which is really all about people, you know, just not consuming culture and just creating their own. Like, find out what's best for you. Find out what's a great meat alternative, and don't necessarily go left or right because there's a great headline for it or against it. That's the power of coercion, you know. And in a matter of a day or two, you'll see, you know,
everyone's scared of something.
Yeah. Right. And we live in the age now where we can, like, internet and actually individually kind of really dig deep and have our own transparency, where we can find out what study they're referencing. Oh, I mean, what journal is that in? Oh, who funded this? Like, we can find that out. Back in the day,
deep.
You couldn't do that.
Right.
Do you guys aware that your blood type, you know, you should have a certain diet according to your blood type? Have you guys heard about that?
I've heard about the blood type diet, but according to my blood type, I'm supposed to have, like, red meat all the time. And so I don't.
I can promise you, no one is supposed to eat red meat.
And my energy's through the roof. Like, so after I got rid of meat and got rid of dairy, so I... You know, I think there's something to it. I just don't... I haven't looked at it in fully to see what I agree with and what I don't agree with, but obviously I don't think... For me, O positive blood, like, supposed to have red meat all the time, just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I think it's good to know your blood, know your levels, know your blood type, you know, but to just use that as a North Star, life isn't that easy, you know.
At the end of the day, you have to do what works for you.
Yeah,
that's how I feel.
Yeah. And I want to know does my blood mean I can tolerate more saturated fat? Is that what, like, I want to know the underlying stuff, and then I can figure out the food, you know what I mean?
Maybe the FDA will come out with a label that says, like, B positive.
Blood
type only.
That would be interesting, though.
That's next at Whole Foods.
I really do
that's
think...
That's going to be legit.
I think the FDA and health organizations and a lot of those shouldn't have money influencing their decisions. I think when it comes to the health of Americans and everyone in the world, we shouldn't, you know, have our decisions impacted by corporations.
It should be impacted by the facts.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we wouldn't have, like I keep saying this, but it's true, we wouldn't have this obesity epidemic in our country right now if we were provided the correct information. If you have a company that's for profit and in debt to their shareholders, and they're impacting our government and research and studies, we're going to have bad things happen to us.
Yes. I feel like the government is too relaxed on the FDA.
Absolutely.
Across the world, things that are banned at other places are okay here. And how is that even possible?
Yeah.
But then it's like, oh, well, we have an obesity problem. But at the same time, you're allowing these artificial sweeteners and this these toxic pesticides and et cetera, you know, to come into
we're
our
the guinea
strain.
Pigs. Well, at least we're the highest paid guinea pigs in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least we figured out in the United States there's no global warming. So at least there's that.
Yeah. So I think we need the FDA. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying ban the FDA. Yeah. I think the FDA does a lot of great things. It's just I think we need to be a little bit smarter with the FDA. We need to be careful to protect it and allow it to be transparent. Just like we have the Supreme Court that's supposed to be transparent, right? They don't get elected. Well, then let's not have money influence our FDA or EPA or any
of
that.
That's hard. America is a capitalistic society. Everything's ran by the book. So. Yeah.
But some things I think, you know, I think capitalism works in a lot of ways, but I think in some places it's maybe not the best thing for us.
Yeah. It's a little rough, but, you know, we've got to be our own best warriors, I guess. Yeah,
exactly. Well,
we have fitness trends of 2018 that are coming upon us. Before we know it, Halloween's passed. It'll be Thanksgiving in December and New Year's resolution time.
Yes.
So what can we expect? One of the newest trends is something called LIIT, L-I-I-T. We're all familiar with HIIT, where, you know, high-intensity interval cardio.
Right.
And now they have low-intensity interval training, which they're finding is just as effective, but 30 to 40 minutes longer. But if you're someone that struggles with that high intensity, this might be a good alternative. And apparently walking can be part of this low intensity. When you change direction or change speed slightly, it really ups the amount of really ups the amount of
information.
So if you're going to do some LIIT, you want to be walking about 30 to 40 minutes and changing direction and speed 4 to 5 minutes. What do you guys think about LIIT? Is it going to take off in 2018?
Yeah, well, first of all, I like that it's called LIIT because a lot of kids say that.
Exactly.
It's right there. Including me. But hey, I think that's great. Let's get our kids out there. Active and
moving slowly.
And, and anything that if any of these trend or any of these become popular, I'm all for it. I think we don't take enough time out of the day to be healthy and be and exercise, and I think that's such an important thing. I think everyone in here probably, you know, gets out there, but in general, there's not as much time. You know, you're working all the time, and we're working, you know, 3-4 jobs, 12 hours a day, and then you sleep after that. But we need to find at least, you know, an hour for ourselves to either get to the gym or do this LIIT, you know, high intensity walking or slow walking.
I mean, it could be something as simple as parking a few miles back and then, well, not a few miles, but a few blocks back and just walking a little bit more. Yes. Like in New York, they LIIT all the time. They walk everywhere. New York is always LIIT.
I feel like some of my clients have been like implementing LIIT into my program for years because I do high intensity interval training, but when I ask them to do certain things, it's very low intensity.
But do you think it's actually a positive because they kind of get to a place then they can do the high intensity?
In my mind, it's progressive. Yeah. I feel that, you know, anyone I work with, if they're not on the type of level they should be on, maybe they're deconditioned, things like that, it's all low intensity.
Yeah.
Just never gave it a name. It's just about, you know,
got
one. But I also think it's interesting, like, we're trying to just get people to do something. We're trying to make the information easily able to be digested. We're trying to scale things down. And I just think it's very interesting. I mean, there's clearly people trying for us, trying for society. Because every month there's a new way to redefine the same thing, you know. This revolutionary way of working out where you park further away from the front door.
It's called
distance cart. You know, like that.
DC.
But DC, you know. So I'm all for it. Whatever gets people conscious and mindful and active, whatever they want to call it, that's what's up.
Yeah. Options is never a bad thing. So if there's another option where it's high intensity and someone learns or, you know, learns a different way, then give them a low intensity.
Yeah,
options is never, never, never
like
bad.
That. And I also think, you know, with low intensity, you can build up a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
High intensity as well, you know, because you increase your intensity as you go. But I just think, you know, if people just need to ease into it, if you're in a position like, you know, coming from a position of being fairly healthy, I can go to the gym and do some crazy workouts. But if you're not, if you're just getting back into it, if you're overweight or if you're obese, like we have such a problem here in the United States, maybe you start slow because just even starting slow is better than doing nothing.
Yeah, and it's a less intimidating way to kind of foresee the gym. A lot of people have the insecurities and trepidation. So if you're saying, you know, we're actually going to do LIIT training, which is low intensity alone, you know.
I'll come through,
walking, just turn it in circles. Okay, yeah.
Because even for me, if I go to the gym and I'm doing something at a high intensity I've never done before, I'm probably not going to want to do it again. I'm just like, sucked. I didn't get a chance to get used to it and get my body, you know.
And if you wake up super sore the next day, you know, you're going to have that natural reaction and say, I'm never doing that again. And that's unfortunately the circumstance if you haven't been in the gym for a year.
Yeah.
And you go to the gym and you do a high intensity workout, you're going to be sore. Your legs are going to hurt, your arms are going to hurt. And
that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Unless you, you know, have something sore, a condition. But but for the most part, it's a good thing. And then it takes a couple weeks and then you get in the flow of it and then you're not sore anymore. But some people don't make it that long. And so low intensity, you know, you won't hurt as bad and you won't be so discouraged from continuing to do it.
And now I've talked about these two things, infrared saunas and cryotherapy. Have you heard about these? What's your take on these new trends that are hitting?
I have some friends that are doing the cryotherapy all the time. I don't know as much as I should know about it. But I know that people are having good results and they seem happy, and I think that's I think that's a big thing. You know, even if you do something that necessarily maybe, you know, isn't proven to be something or this, but if it makes you happy and at the end of the day it boosts your morale, it's going to make you want to go to the gym more, it's going to make you want to get out and do things more. If you're depressed, you know, you're going to stay in more and and sleep more.
Have you done it?
Have I done it? No, but people keep telling me to do it.
Are you going to? Or are you just morally opposed?
I'm so open to try it. Hey, look, I'm open to try anything but meat. I will never try.
Well, first of all, I love cryotherapy. I've been doing it. I've done it everywhere I've been a trainer at. If you're looking for a place, you can go to Next Health off Sunset. I'm telling you, but your first session will be free. And they're true to their word. Cryotherapy is dope for me because I ice daily.
Yeah.
So it takes that out of my, you know, daily agenda to have to sit down and, you know, put the frozen peas on my legs.
Yeah.
It's good to just go knock it out in 3 minutes. And then I feel that it's a good way to get people just interested in the recovery aspect. A lot of people are so, you know, focused on training. They have no knowledge or consciousness of, like, the after. You know, how are you healing your body? What does it even mean to rebuild? Yeah. What are, you know, what are amino acids, sort of thing? So I just think it's a great extreme way to open people up to the other side of the gym, which is how you take care of yourself. I'm all about that. You know, if I work out 5 days, you know, straight, I'm definitely stretching and icing. But you have some people that are training like athletes and chilling.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's good for the game.
Have you done infrared saunas?
I've done it once.
Okay.
I wasn't... It was cool. I mean, she was saying that it was gonna, you know, burn X amount of calories.
They're amazing. Yeah.
I'm cool with all types of saunas.
Yeah.
I love the heat. So.
Is it warmer than a regular sauna?
It will heat you from the inside out.
Yeah.
So you do feel like you're heating up more.
But you're not sweating.
But your
skin
is
it's a dry heat.
But I've left the regular sauna and I've had like burns, whereas you don't get burned from the infrared sauna.
Right.
And when I've done the infrared sauna 2 or 3 days in a row, I'm super lean and super shredded. So I do know it's burning a lot more calories.
Yeah. It seemed more like a microwave though, you know?
Yeah, it is. A microwave for the body.
They're gonna do an article about that later about the infrared.
I feel
like that's coming.
10 years from now,
everything that we're doing is gonna be like
2 months
later.
Oh man. And then a little bit more about you. You came from New York. Moved out here for acting. You had a skate shop in New York.
Look at that. He did some background.
Of course. He opened up a skate shop with his brother. And then how have you maintained your health and your fitness? Did Law and Order. Have you done all that? Because I think a lot of people have trouble maintaining that when their environment changed.
Yeah. And I think an interesting thing to say is a lot of celebrities and actors, athletes, and people I've been involved with are vegan. So in terms of like the health side of it, there is a lot of accessibility, especially in the entertainment industry, and I think that's amazing. But you know, I think from starting a business with my brother, I started right after I graduated college. I went to the University of Miami, and then I graduated in 2011. I think that you know, it helped me with my dietary choices because I had a lot more energy, and sometimes I would sleep 2 to 3 hours a day, and I don't recommend that. I don't think that's healthy. But at the time I was doing a lot. I was acting, like I said, I was on TV. I still do acting on TV shows, and between being on set doing TV shows, which are long days, I'm sure as you guys all know, and then also opening this business, opening 6 stores within 2 years. It takes a lot of time and a lot of energy, and you're out building out stores in 24 hours, and it's crazy. But without that energy and without that health, I think it would have been really challenging to do that. So the accessibility, I think, is more so when I was younger, it was more challenging. When I would do sleepovers, you know, at kids' houses.
You're hungry.
But I will say, like, in my town, which is a small town, and there was no fast food, which was amazing. Thank you to my town for not having any of that. But there,
where's your town?
Montauk, Long Island.
Long Island,
in New York, yeah. So there was no fast food, which is amazing. But there was also like very limited accessibility to like meat substitutes or any of the, you know, the fake meats or stuff like that. So for the most part, you know, like when I did sleep over at someone's house, it was like spaghetti or something. But the parents, I will to the credit of them, really did go out of their way to make like vegetarian and vegan meals for me, which is cool. They knew, they were like, Marley's coming over. So
they
made
no problem from your parents.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly. But when you go to sports games, like you go to the stadium, even when I just went to the Clippers Golden State Warriors, and it's really limited, you know? Yeah. It's very limited. The fact that you have to search far and wide to find, and there's a lot more now because vegan's way more accessible than it was when I was a kid.
Yeah.
The hardest part is you have to be smart with prepacking your meals, you know, cooking at home, which is healthier, honestly.
I'd be smart with the drinking because, you know, normally there was food I could eat if I'm gonna have a drink.
Yeah,
sometimes you're just starving, but I can drink the drink, but now I'm drinking on an empty stomach. So that was always been a tough one.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if you're drinking or you're out with friends and you know, you just get good at saying no, because a lot of these restaurants, like, it's still true today, is a side salad and maybe a potato.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not many options, and that lack of accessibility. It's like, these are just vegetables, people. Like, everyone always asks you, so what do you eat? And that blows my mind. Just follow one vegan blogger or one, you know, vegan Instagram account, and you'll see what we eat.
I feel like most people are like a piece of chicken away from just being a vegetarian.
Yeah,
vegan.
Yeah,
like,
absolutely.
You don't realize it's like 80% of the plate.
It's not that hard. And it's not that hard to get there.
It makes you creative when you're vegan. Because you start thinking, well, what can I do? What can I make? McDonald's with the new McVegan now. And we also have Whole Foods creating vegan sushi. So the McVegan's going to be over in Finland, but I would love to see it here in the United States.
Yeah.
But what do you guys think about some of these vegan trends in food hitting us? And Whole Foods right here in LA is going to be doing the vegan sushi.
Yeah, so that's actually
I'll try it. That's what I say. I'll try it. And as far as McDonald's, I think anything that McDonald's do, they're about profit. So I don't think it's going to necessarily be the healthiest. Still,
but healthier.
Well, yeah. But I still, even their salads are not as healthy as a salad.
Healthier for who? Unless McDonald's shuts down, they're not healthier for the planet.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely not going to take my dollar and still support.
Oh, I'll buy the McVegan.
You're going to support the machine?
I'll buy the McVegan.
That is the meat and dairy.
Because they'll change if more people buy the McVegan.
So you're going to go through the
drive-thru. Their incentives.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's the tricky thing. Yeah. So I'm vegan for three reasons, right? The reasons are obviously ethical. I don't want to see animals die or be, you know, used as you know, or just used as like a property, you know, for milking and you know, milk and dairy and their body parts and everything. I just think it's terrible, and hopefully we'll stop soon. Mm-hmm. And then I do that. So the ethical, and then there's also the environmental. Mm-hmm. You know, the methane gas released by the cows, mm-hmm. and the deforestation. Mm-hmm. The massive dead zones in our seas. And then, you know, the last reason I do is for health, right? Which I think you get so many health benefits from being vegan. I think you can make bad choices as a vegan, but overall, generally, if you're vegan, you're going to see health benefits. You're not going to have that high cholesterol. You're not going to have the high saturated fat, because that comes directly from meat. So in the case of McDonald's... Because it's important, because the McVegan, like... I was an economics and political science major, and I think in terms of an economic standpoint, if people buy the McVegan, like you were saying, it's going to be on menus everywhere.
True.
And if it's on menus anywhere, let's be honest, as much as we don't like McDonald's is everywhere. It's very accessible.
Yes.
So
right.
If we increase the accessibility of the McVegan and people buy it, even though I agree, I don't think McVegan's going to be healthy.
It's not. I don't think so.
But what it is it's covering two of my three areas, right?
Yeah.
It's better for... it's better ethically, and it's better environmentally.
Yeah.
And so from that standpoint, I definitely would buy one, and I would definitely encourage people to buy them. I'm not going to encourage someone that's obese to go buy it. You know what I mean? I don't want to encourage people to have bad habits. You know, I would say eat fruits and vegetables.
Right. But
if you're going to go anyway, and it's offered on the menus, and like you said, it's just being tested in Finland. Like, we can't get too far ahead of ourselves.
Who do you
like,
think it's for? Is it for the vegan, or is it for the person that's never even considered eating plant-based and wants to give it a try? Like, what are the intentions?
I think it's for both. Because, you know, as a vegan, I would love for there to be any kind of fast food on the way on a long road trip, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if there's just a burger that, like, I hate a burger that's just lettuce and tomato, because I've had to do that before.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I'm on this, you know, 7-day trip. Let me go. So for me, that's where I would utilize it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So And I think that's better because, you know, again, it's changing those economics. Mm-hmm.
My thing is just, I didn't mean to cut you. My thing is, you know, McDonald's went so long before they started telling us everything that was in our food. I mean, we were already out of school before we knew, like, the chicken McNugget wasn't just chicken.
Wasn't
and
chicken.
The beef wasn't all beef. So I'm just like, okay, you fool me once, shame on me. How realistic can I take a vegan burger from a company who is obsessed with making money and cutting corners?
Well, I think we got to hold their feet to the fire, and I think we're in an age that we can.
Let you test it.
Well, yeah, well, I think we're in an age that we can. I don't think before you wouldn't have as many consumer groups maybe buying the product and testing it, and then telling people, and then it's on the internet, so I can see it right away. It'll be on Twitter.
They're
tomorrow.
Doing like their own home experiment.
If it turns out they're sneaking meat into the soy patty, it'll be on Twitter the next day. Do you know what I mean?
Like, that's a whole other thing, because in the depth of your veganism, like some people don't even want their food to touch the same grill.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it's because you know,
are they going to be
somebody gonna be lazy. Like, I thought I gave him a vegan patty, but
and they're eating it. Like, you're eating it. Oh, this is tasty. This tastes good. And oh my god, this is extra flavor. And it's like, it's real chicken.
I think that's like, I think that's an interesting point that you're making. One, how do we trust McDonald's after what they've done to our country for so long?
Yes.
I personally don't trust McDonald's. But the other thing is that question of like the different levels of vegan. There's people who are vegan that are, like you said, they don't want their food to touch meat. Like I'm personally that way as well. But I encourage people even to take a step towards vegan. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So I think that's a pro. I think that's definitely going to be a pro. A lot of people, when they hear veganism, I don't know if that's a phase or not, when they hear about being vegan, they're scared because they don't know. So I think there's going to be a ton of people trying the vegan burger just because McDonald's say, hey, this is good.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Now it's going to be a lot of people introduced to it, and they're going to try the lifestyle. And I was like, it's not that bad.
Yeah, you know, even if a small percentage like it, that to win.
Yeah, exactly. Even we can get a couple people to be, every single person that becomes vegan, that's a lot of animals saved. That's a lot of damage to our environment, you know, that we don't have happen. So I think
the real thing will come when McDonald's starts to talk about, or if they ever do, why even go vegan? Because then they're going to start to contradict their entire brand.
I'll tell you why. Because McDonald's is seeing their profits decrease, and the reason that that's occurring more so than people going vegan is because people don't see McDonald's as healthy anymore. And like I said, obesity is rising so fast, and people don't want to be overweight. People don't want to be sick.
They're miserable.
And so they're cutting out fast food, and that's why they try to offer salads, and they try all these different gimmicks. But at the end of the day, McDonald's is profit-driven, right? So they're saying, let's try something
else. When the market changed, they changed.
Yeah, how much does it hurt us to try out this?
If everyone starts like a soup, then McDonald's starts selling soup.
They're also thinking, look at how much press we can get. You know what I mean? They're thinking about the PR opportunity.
When we change the economic incentives, then these companies begin to change.
And I think it's a double-edged sword with McDonald's, because on one side of it is we're raising awareness for veganism, which is huge. We always want to do that with the McVegan. But then the other side of it is we're raising awareness for McDonald's. So, which to be honest is
but
not.
But they got plenty of awareness.
Got plenty of awareness. But we don't want to give them any boost. You know what I mean? We don't, especially as vegans that are promoting good health.
People are going to be waiting on like the faces of that lifestyle vegan, you know, to for their approval. Like, you know, are the bodybuilders and the athletes and the trainers, are they endorsing it?
Yeah, because every time we share that McVegan on our Facebook, and it's only available in you know, Finland, and someone sees that, and we're constantly sharing this McDonald's thing on Facebook and Instagram and all of our social media. And then they go to their McDonald's in the US, and guess what? It's not available.
Let me take that off my Facebook page.
I strongly think everything that's going on right now is not necessarily targeted to us, but the next generation. Like the way TV works, the way movies work. So right now with the McDonald's doing a vegan burger, it's not necessarily for us, it's for the next generation to pick up
and
on
hopefully
that.
Hopefully just good point. Yes. Yeah. Unfortunately, we do have to wrap, I would love to hear from you just quickly before we wrap. If you could tell someone who's considering the vegan lifestyle one thing, what would it be?
I would say that it's much easier than you think. And also, there's a misconception about who is vegan, as you can see from all of us. You know, normal, I guess. You know, there's athletes, there's celebrities. It's for everyone. Yeah. Vegan is for everyone. It's not a niche. It's not a lifestyle. It is literally a simple change that you just take small steps towards, and once you do it, it's life changing. There's a reason why people get so excited when they're vegan. It's because you're healthy, you're happy, and you're saving the world. So
awesome! Thank you so much for joining us, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it. It's always good to be with vegans.
Yes, vegan training.
Pescatarian.
She's getting there. She's getting there. After this, hopefully, she'll make this.
Yeah, I know, right? We love you. We love you.
Thank you guys for joining us again. My name is Shaka Smith. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat at Shaka Strong.
And I'm Marley Ficalora. You can find me on Instagram at Marley Ficalora or on Facebook, facebook.com/MarleyFicalora.
All right, and I'm Funny Sarai on Instagram and Twitter. And on Facebook, it's just S-A-Y-R-I-E, Sarai.
Go to my Instagram right now, at I am Corey Taylor.
And they can find you at the Circle V Vegan Festival when?
Yeah, I'll be at Circle V. That's coming up, I believe, at the end of this month.
End of this month, Vegan Festival, Circle V, Marley Ficalora. Thank you, guys. Have a good one.
Woo, V for vegan.
From executives Kevin Undergaro, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us. info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I am the official voice of Black Hollywood Live, Scipio, Instagram at KingXOBay.
Defined.
Thanks for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.